I've reported other people's stories for a long time, confronting people in power. But behind this broadcast voice, I've hidden my greatest secret. I was in an abusive marriage. It lasted a year, but it changed my life. Part of me always blamed myself for what happened, and I've lived with the shame. So many of us live like this. It's time we change that. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Welcome to Paradise is My Story. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Yeah, some hard, like I'm going away in for spring break. So my inner dialogue has been like around body and stuff has been really hard, knowing I'm going to a beach and like all that's attached to that. My day can be good or bad depending on the scale or how I'm feeling or how I ate. So that's been for sure present. You work so hard to like on this like hamster wheel. Yeah. And it's like almost feels like a bit of look at all the time I've like lost. Oh, wow. And even now, like I think of how much energy I put into like food and like exercise and all the things. And when it's like such a you know, it's just like all the energy I put into that and how much I've lost, really.
Yeah.
I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. You're listening to a real-life therapy session between me and one of my longtime clients we're calling Lacey. You've already met Lacey, but just so that I can remind you about who she is, Lacey came into therapy because she had a history of childhood neglect, and she wanted to work on learning to love herself as she is. She carried around a history of an eating disorder and perfectionism and a self-critical inner dialogue that never seemed to quit. And so here we are working on negotiating a new way of relating to her body. And you can hear her talk about how much time she's lost, beating herself up, shaming herself, feeling like her body should be different than it is. She's realizing she wants more for herself.
It looks a little bit like maybe a mix of anger and sadness.
Yeah. Like grief.
Grief.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I'm trying really hard not to go to the, like, I could have been a better parent, or I could have, like, because it's not helpful.
Yeah.
But even just, like, my mood sometimes is, like, totally thrown off by, you know, my body image. And then I realize, like, of course that's going to impact, like, the people in my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So grief. And it feels like a little bit more, but I can't quite.
Like regret.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe even like some shame about it.
Wow.
Because it's like, why is this such a big thing? Like, I can't change how that thought process and that thinking and my action on those behaviors, even though I know it's stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hearing that stuckness. Really. Yeah. Really wanting things to be different, and yet you're still here.
But also afraid of things being different.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like gaining a bunch of weight. Like, it's right. Like I stay in this controlled stage because, like, I have this vision that, like, if I stopped, I would be 200 pounds, and nothing wrong with 200 pounds. That's my fear, right?
Wow, I'm really hearing you in that place in between what has been and realizing it hasn't worked for you, but then also not sure about things being different.
Yeah.
For people who struggle with eating disorders, for people who struggle with particularly restrictive type eating disorders, there's often an internalized fat phobia. There's a story inside that even if she was to be 200 pounds, that would be a horrible thing. So what I'm trying to hear in behind that is the way that the critic has created this either-or dynamic on the inside of her. If I don't have this specific, really restrictive narrative around food, then my life is going to get out of control. and it's going to be awful and it's going to make me unlovable. And that binary kind of thinking, the perfectionistic black and white thinking, is often what traps us in this really small version of our lives. While our struggles with body image or food are sort of about body image and food, I like to think of those things as the solution to a problem. So if trying to change our body or restrict our food or control our food is the solution, what is the problem it's solving? And I think about for Lacey how the problem is this feeling of not being good enough. Growing up in a context where she was neglected, where she wasn't ever sure where her next meal would come from because there was so much instability, there was actually no food security in her house growing up. Trying to manage food and control it is a way to make up for these childhood wounds.
Let's try a different angle here. When you are feeling in deep and loving relationship with yourself and feeling like, wow, I could really take in love from myself and give that to myself, and wow, that loop got closed and felt so delicious. Mm-hmm. When you're in that space, what are some of your thoughts about weight, body change, food?
I would like to say that I could just love me for me. But then there's this caveat of like me for me as I am. Right? Like
what I think I'm wanting to suggest is that the preoccupation around eating and food and weight isn't the problem. It's the symptom of the problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that if as long as we're still focused on that, we're missing, we're missing what maybe you need most.
Yeah.
Maybe what's underneath that. I'm still inclined to think about those things as happening less for you when you know you're safe.
Yeah.
When you know you're loved.
Yeah.
If we were to think about the roots, like if the eating, preoccupation, weight, all of your, everything we're talking about is the leaves on a specific tree. I'd love to hear your thoughts around some of the roots, as in like what I think about myself, what I believe about myself, what those stories are, as compared to the stories over here with this other root system that we've been building, the new one.
Yeah.
I'm loved, I'm safe, I don't have to earn anything. All of that.
Well, it's like this, I need to work so hard to be seen.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that was a big thing that came out of last session, was just like realizing that I just needed like a place to be safe and seen.
Yes.
Without like, look at me, look at me.
Yeah.
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 Like it feels like such a simple thing. But that was so missing in my life. Like when we did the exercise last week and we came into my home, it was such a like realization that that's all I needed was like a safe, comfortable space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Home.
Yeah.
That was safe and where there were adults and your needs were met. I feel some sadness with you too.
Yeah.
Just in how much you didn't have, and then how hard you worked, just like we're saying, to try to get safety and okayness.
Yeah, and like I didn't even realize, like I don't even think I really realized, and I was telling my friend this, I was telling her about our session, and I was like, I didn't realize how much I just needed a home, and how much I wanted that, like someone to make my lunch for school, or like to tuck me in at night, or and in those moments I didn't want any of that, like I was like, I got this, like, and didn't want my mom to be home because that brought chaos, and like celebrated when she wasn't home, but realizing how actually I needed that, like I needed someone to make me dinner and to have breakfast, like have a fridge with food in it, and like the things that are just like basic needs. And then realizing, like, I would go to school and take all this criticism, like, I wasn't doing my homework, or I wasn't and never really voicing, well, this is what's going on. Like, just being like, oh, I'm not holding it together.
It sounds like there's a real realization here about how much you internalized that.
Mm-hmm.
But in actuality, how you didn't do anything wrong, right?
Yeah.
You weren't doing anything wrong. And people at school didn't see that.
But to just realize that now, when I'm like 45, I'm like, yeah, like I think the realization that I really just feel the shitty feelings,
wow.
like the heart racing and the stress and the,
yeah.
and I don't really ever let myself feel like joy or balance or being content. Like,
that seems like such a significant thing to realize.
Yeah, like I know there's joy in my life. Like, and there's actually Tuesday, I felt so empowered. It was such a weird feeling because I couldn't explain it.
Tell me more.
On Tuesday, we met with a psychologist for my daughter doing a psych ed. And, like, it was so empowering because I was second-guessing, like, am I overreacting? Is she fine? Are people going to judge me? Because I really, in my gut, feel like something's going on for her. And this meeting, I was like, oh, my God, you just, like, made me feel so in tune with my kid. And
yes.
Like, really, I laughed. Like, it was the weird. I drove back to work, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I just felt so validated.
Yes.
And I, like, it was, I wanted to tell everybody.
Yeah.
But I was like, it's really not fair for me to tell everyone about my daughter and her academic struggles.
Yeah.
But I was, like, vibrating. And I don't, and it was the weirdest, like, I don't really ever have those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's two things going on right now, even in this moment. One is you telling me about this fantastic moment,
mm-hmm.
and I want to come back to it. It seems like it's like coming up in the moment you had your hands in the air a second ago. And then the other part, which is realizing this again, maybe even grief of like, how long have I not let myself feel all of these incredible feelings when I've been so over there, preoccupied about all of these things that maybe just keep me stuck.
Yeah.
What else am I missing out on?
Yeah, like, why have I not, like, internalized physically that joy?
This is a good moment to remind ourselves that we can't numb feelings selectively. We can't numb the hard stuff without also numbing the really enjoyable stuff. So to get through her childhood, Lacey found a way to shove down the feelings that were otherwise overwhelming and unbearable. But in doing so, it cost her something. It cost her the ability to feel the joy in all of its fullness. So it's not unusual that in therapy, as we start getting into feelings again and making room for the things that are not so fun to feel, that we start to notice the other things too. We start to notice the joy and the excitement, pleasure, delight, gratitude, a sense of connectedness between us and other people. But at first, those feelings are uncomfortable. And if you actually break it down to what's going on in the body, the feeling of joy or excitement is not actually that different than the feeling of fear or worry or anxiety. You can hear her talk about that vibrating feeling in the same way that we think about anxiety moving in the body, this kind of intense sensation where there's tons of energy coursing through us. And so what I'm wanting to do is help her learn to tolerate the joy too, to realize that it's something that she can stay with.
It was so foreign, this feeling.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, paint me a picture. If I had never experienced joy or validation or excitement in that way, and I was coming down from outer space, how would you describe it to me?
I just felt like 2 feet off the ground. Like, I literally was so light, and I was flying, and I was like, I didn't get a compliment, like, wow, you're on it as a parent, but I knew. Like, I was like, I was in tune with her. And so I felt like it was like a secret compliment, where I was like, dang, like,
all of that paying attention that you've been doing,
it
mattered, it was important, it was spot on.
I just felt so powerful.
I hear the energy in your voice, even as you're remembering it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, and the lightness, and it, there's got to be a better way to explain it, but all I can think about right now is like heart expanding. Totally. Just like,
yeah, like I felt like opening. I was walking with my chest out. Like, yeah.
Because Lacey and I have just been talking about joy, the fact that she's having this moment of kind of visceral awareness of her power, and it seems so distinct from how she's talked about herself in the past, I'm wanting to zero in on it and keep her in it. Our brain stores negative associations or negative memory differently than it does positive memory or positive associations. In fact, we need to stay with the positive things about 15 to 100 times longer than we do the negative things for them to integrate into our nervous system. We call this the negative memory bias, or in Rick Hansen's research, the Velcro Teflon theory, where we have a kind of Velcro ability to, you know, join with and adhere to the negative or uncomfortable or fear-based things in our life, where our brains are actually more like Teflon to the positive things. It's like they don't stick. And so I'm trying to give her a sense of, you know, being able to dig her fingers into this or sink her teeth into this experience of power in a way that it actually starts to take up a little bit more neurological real estate.
Through the appointment, like the woman asked how he was academically and then asked me, and she was like, oh, well, it comes from somewhere. And I realized I was her in school. Like, I really struggled in school and I couldn't focus and pay attention. And whether that was trauma or attention issues or like, that was me. So maybe it feels good because I'm like, I can do for her what was never done for me.
Yes.
Like, no one... It was like, if I wasn't doing well in school, it was my fault. Like, you're not working hard enough, you're not.
I wonder if we can just slow down there for a second. Yeah, what nobody did for you.
I think school is really hard. And I think there was all these excuses like, oh, your parents divorced, or your... And I'm sure all those things had an impact. But no one ever said, how can I help you?
Sounds like you were really missed.
Yeah.
Can we do another imaginary experiment together? Can you imagine seeing the you that was struggling in elementary school?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some scenes that flash. Yeah. Okay. And like we practiced before, bring your present day self in. Can you go up to that girl and tell her that you're her but grown up? And give her something she needs. That moment. And what do you want to tell her? What does she need to hear you say?
I think she just needs someone to take time like figure out the task she's on.
Yeah, so see yourself taking that time with her. Slowing down, getting on her level. And maybe if it feels right to add in there, I'm so sorry it took so long for someone to do this for you. I wish I could have come back sooner to help you. And just let me know if she says or does anything in response.
She just smiles.
Yeah. Can you ask her how it feels to have you there? And then when you feel ready, bringing that younger version of you into your home right now. What's happening there?
We're just sitting on the couch and like our cat just like crawled on her lap. Oh, wow. It's just like a cozy.
Yeah. So why don't you try to savor this moment of connection. Seeing if you can really let yourself notice what happens in your body when you see this. And then when you're ready, coming back to the room.
Mm-hmm.
What's this feel like?
That content feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There we are.
Yeah.
We're back there again.
Wow. So much of Lacey's struggle with her body is the result of her trying to make up for a sense of lack of control in her life and a sense of not knowing that she is enough and loved and good. The idea is that if we can help her internalize my care for her, and if we can help her see herself the way that she sees her daughters, that there will be this natural kind of loving care for herself that emerges. We're trying to build a new working model of the world from the inside out, borrowing from my love for her and from her love for her girls.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb, and through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
What do you think it would be like to be on this trip in the bathing suit, like this?
It would be lovely. Like, I work out in the morning and there's a mirror, and I was like in a bra and in my shorts, and I was like, whatever, like, here I am.
Whoa.
And it's very like small, like thought, and I'm like, yeah, but ooh. So it's like small glimpses of like, yeah, like, so what? You know, I can sit in the bath with my kids.
Right.
And I'm stressing about it, but they don't care.
They don't care.
They really don't. They really don't.
And so they don't care. And also, like, maybe I don't have to care.
Yeah. Okay. Like, just let it go and be in this moment.
Okay. So this is reminding me of something that happened in our last appointment, where there was this moment of connection between us, and then this wall that went up to kind of protect you from...
Yeah.
Really being seen. And
yeah.
You took a really interesting kind of like stressed
breath. No,
it wasn't. It was stress. Okay. It almost looked like when someone's preparing for something difficult, they're like...
Maybe a little.
Oh, maybe a little bit. Okay.
It's like, where are we going?
Okay. So there was this like connection, and actually it was coming out of me affirming you and saying, oh, I'm so proud of you. And it was like, oh, there's too much to tolerate it. I don't know if I can be with that, right? Put the wall up. Interesting process. Mm-hmm. You're doing your workout, you see the mirror, you have this moment, ah, who cares? And then that same thing comes up.
Yeah.
Like, no, I can't stay with that.
Mm-hmm.
No.
That doesn't serve me.
Yeah. Some way of like, again, there's got to be some great metaphors, like sports metaphor here, of like some... Like, I'm thinking about, like, football. Like, someone's running with the ball, and then there's that person who's chasing after them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really showing my ignorance about football here. And tackles them. Like, no, I don't want you to take that ball to that side. We're not, like, you're on the opposite team. The ball needs to be going the other way. Like, there's something about these moments of insight and connection and growth and freedom. And then something comes up to stop you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is probably more than I've ever had, right? Like, to notice those. So it is a little freeing. Like, even if it's, like, a little, it's like... Or even if it's just me saying, I have to let this go. Like, we're leaving in 2 weeks. So what am I going to do about it? Nothing. I mean, just be you. It's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Such an important insight you're having.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, this is new for these moments to come up. Wow.
Yeah.
Here's a proposition for you, or maybe a theoretical proposal. What if that free part was the real you? And not actually like this aberration, this thing that just kind of pops up and it's kind of magical, but what if that was like you... You when you are your most you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who you've always been and always are. I think about the, you know, the metaphor that sometimes we use around the sun in Vancouver, like it's always there even if the clouds are in the way.
Mm-hmm.
we might see cloudy gray sky, but we know somewhere behind there is the sun, mm-hmm. even if we can't see it, but it's still there. Mm-hmm. That this you is like the sun that's always there. Mm-hmm. What would it be like to think about that as the real you? Not even some person we had to work to get to.
Yeah. That it's there.
Yeah, that is, that's actually just the natural you. What, mm-hmm. what happens if we think about it like that?
A bit of a mix. Like, part of me can sense this, like, relief yeah. to think that I could actually just not be that stressed.
Wow.
But then there's some anger because I'm like, what a waste. Yeah. So it feels like there's that anger of, like, this has consumed so much of my time. And ultimately, it actually hasn't really gotten me anywhere.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Can I just check in? Is the anger at yourself or is the anger at the process?
At my family, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me more?
Well, like just being mad at the adults in my life for kind of letting things get to where they are.
Yeah. Can we can we sense into that anger? What does anger feel like?
It's a hard feeling for me.
Okay.
Like, it's like I can voice it, but it's hard for me to feel that. That anger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who does anger well that you know?
I know a lot of people who do it not well.
Okay.
Actually, we're not that close, or I don't know her that well, but someone who I was like in a mom group with, she's very mama bear. Yeah.
Something happening there for you?
I just realized that that's like the one person I know. Yeah. And she's a lovely human.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she, like, if she's angry, she'll, and she doesn't have shame about it.
Yeah.
Like, she's just like, that's not okay.
Yeah, that's not okay. Can we bring her into this, this situation? What might she say about what happened for you growing up? Okay, let's hear it.
Yeah, she would definitely think that wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And she would, I think she would just name it.
Yeah, okay.
It's just like, change this.
Huh.
Yeah.
Could you embody her?
Yeah.
For a moment, think about what you might want to say about what happened for you growing up.
I think she would say, like, fix this. Like, this innocent child needs to be loved.
Yeah.
Needs connection, needs family.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she would really see that. Yeah. She's like an amazing mom. And I think she would walk in and be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I think she would quickly identify the needs of of me as a child.
Okay. Can we imagine for a moment that she comes in and does that for you as a kid?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she would also be empathic to my mom. Like, I think she'd be like, you need to fix some stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
and what's it like to receive the protectiveness that comes from her anger as you're imagining this?
I think more what I was picturing is like seeing my mom feel supported. Like, she would be like, how can I help you? I'll make some food for you. Like, what do you need to be able to do this better? And that feels really good.
Yeah.
And it feels good because it would be, I can imagine myself in my room like, oh, wow, like, she's helping my
Someone's
mom.
Coming to help.
I think my vision always was like for someone to come in and get rid of my mom and like pull me out of that scenario.
Yeah.
And it's actually really nice to be able to vision like if someone had actually come in and supported my mom, how it could have been different.
As I'm listening to you, I'm wondering how much you're thinking about what your mom needs.
Yeah.
And not that that's, I mean, that sounds like such a caring thing. And yet I keep wondering, And are you feeling protected? And are you getting to feel like you get to be the focus? Right? So I have a little question mark around that. I'm not quite sure. I'm wondering what you think. Does it feel like you're overprotecting your mom or overfocusing on her when we think about this way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When someone is in our life, parenting us, when they are our person and we're biologically wired to need them for our survival, it clouds our ability to be able to reflect on their behavior and how it impacts us. So, it's pretty normal when doing work around childhood trauma that if the person who is responsible for the trauma is a parent, that there is some sort of inner conflict. Often a person will say they were just doing their best, and you can hear how they're not really allowing themselves to have their own experience. That there's this kind of bias towards protecting the caregiver and protecting their internal image of the caregiver because it's what they had to do all along just to survive. You can imagine that as a kid, if the person who is hurting you is also the person who's sometimes mostly meeting your needs, you're not going to want to anger them or push them away. And it would be too disruptive psychologically to admit the toll that their behavior was having on you, because what other choices do you have but just to comply with what is? It's really hard to let ourselves get into our real reaction, our honest reaction to seeing what a person's behavior did to us. And it's really important as I'm thinking about this that I say, I'm not going to ask Lacey to actually confront her mom. I don't think you have to confront a person who hurt you in order for you to get healing. Because I want to make it clear that we don't actually need that other person to help us heal on the inside. Our healing isn't contingent on them doing anything. That's something that we hold on the inside of us. But we want to split apart in our minds the version of the person who hurt us, who was just doing the best they could, and this other version of them who needed to show up for us and didn't.
Yeah, like I wanted her to be better.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is, I think, a really important thing that most of us don't hear and learn is that you can be really angry. Mm-hmm. And the anger that you have is actually about you. It tells you something that happened wasn't right. You wish something could be different. You want to have a voice. Something like your body's giving you all this energy to intervene. That when we're focused on your mom,
yeah,
we're actually missing what's really meaningful here, which is you are getting this like, oh, kind of energy happening in you to say it was not okay, mm-hmm. which is something you didn't get to say then. No. It's just something you didn't even know then.
Yeah, like I think that there's anger at my mom for being quite selfish. Like she really chose herself. It's like, no, like you talk all the time about how you wanted kids. It's like, well, here we are. And just her oblivion to our, like even now, like she'll tell stories about her childhood. And I'll look at each other like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that is not our experience.
Right.
You know, you have people sitting there being like, oh, your mom was so great. I'm like, what? Like, so I get mad that she can't just acknowledge what a shit show it was. And, like, maybe that's her understanding of it. But, like, even, like, her stories of, like, things that we did, I'm like, we never did that.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Okay, can you drop into sensing? What are you noticing right now?
Yeah, that's when I get mad.
Yeah, what is mad like?
It's like kind of like shaky. Like, I'm just like, oh!
Ooh, okay. So, sometimes yeah. means like energy or tension in our throat, in our face.
Yeah, like, because I bite my tongue and I don't say anything. Mm-hmm. But I'm.
Stay with me right now. What's happening in your jaw?
Yeah, like I feel tension in here.
Yeah.
And it is. It's like about just like holding it in.
Mm-hmm. And you got a foot going here, right? So we've got some movement yeah. happening in your body. Like there's energy.
Well, it actually kind of feels freeing to say it. It feels like it's coming out of my pores. Like
Yeah.
Well,
since it feels freeing to say that, anything else you want to say?
Like, I think I would just like to say, no, actually, this was my experience.
Yeah.
She likes to brag about, like, what we did, but it's like, you were really a terrible mom in those moments. Like, yeah. Like, you weren't even there.
Can you say that again?
You were a really terrible mom. Like, yeah, she was just so caught up in her relationships and her, she was not present. And she put us at risk, like.
Can you tell me more about what you want to say about what it was like for you in those moments when you are biting your tongue? What is getting bitten down?
You are not present.
Yeah.
And I don't know where these stories come from because you were not there.
Yeah. What else would you say?
I would say, actually, a lot of the decisions you made were more harmful and have had an impact on me my whole life.
Yeah. What else?
That in the small things that you did with us couldn't make up for the small, like, the day-to-day needs that we had. Like, you can't just say, oh, we're going to drive to Florida and think that makes up for you not being home for a month. No, you never cooked meals for us. She would talk about meals that she would make sometimes, like, oh, these were the girls' favorites. And I'm like, you never cooked for us. Like, you didn't. The fridge was empty all the time. And I blame you for much of my body image issues. I would eat meals before I came home because I didn't know there would be a meal. And then I couldn't be honest. And then I would eat a second meal just to, like, please you. Like, just the idea of that it was so much that we were, like, on show. Like, I had to dress a certain way and look a certain way and act a certain way. And it was, so the message always that she gave me was I wasn't enough.
What are you noticing right now?
It feels good to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I experienced you as being really powerful in this moment.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It was helpful to envision, like, it almost validated it, because sometimes I'm just like, it was no big deal.
That's the mom.
She'd come in and she'd be like, what the heck? Like, imagining her coming in and being my advocate as a kid feels really good.
Yeah. Well, it almost seemed like if she was allowed to be angry, that you were allowed to be angry.
Yeah.
And seeing yourself through her eyes, or borrowing from her sense of justice and rightness and wrongness, gave you the courage to step out from behind the roadblock that was blocking some of your anger.
Like, I can't imagine her being very stern in that moment.
Wow.
And it kind of almost made it okay that I was mad.
And how relieving to have someone come to your defense. You were just saying, even school, they didn't notice you were struggling at home. No one was around.
Mm-hmm.
To have someone come in and see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
When she could sense somebody else's anger and it could be seen and understood as good and valuable and important, I saw a chance to build a bridge between this thing that she knew was good when it was in someone else, but was disconnected for her on the inside. So sometimes we exclude ourselves from the care that we give to others or that we never got, somehow telling a story inside of ourselves that those things are okay for other people, but they're not okay for me. It's not like we had to build a kind of protective figure from the ground up, but we could borrow one that was already in her world. It helped her brain start to open a file, so to speak, about protectiveness for herself and the sense that she was worthy of and deserving of being protected.
If we go back to this part of you that's confident, and we've been talking about this as a part that is content and present, it's a very useful strategy to think about the defense, the roadblock. Mm-hmm. I can't feel that. As a thing you learned to do, but not who you are.
Yeah.
And what this does is it just shifts the balance of power to you being the part that you want to see more of, instead of you being this other part.
Mm-hmm.
So we call this in therapy externalizing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You might have heard this from things like language like depression, instead of like, I am depressed, saying like, oh, the depression is here.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, I am actually a present, content person, but look, the roadblock is here, and it seems like it's getting in the way. The clouds are getting in the way of the sunshine, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'd like for you to pay attention to these moments where you comes out from behind this roadblock.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe when the roadblock tries to get in the way and say, like, no, this can't continue, that you actually can respond to that. Mm-hmm. And say, what?
I don't need you anymore.
Ooh. Oh, how about that again?
I don't need you anymore.
Yeah. What was that like to say that?
Oof. It's such a realization that it was like, I did need it.
Yeah.
And that it's okay. It was a useful strategy in the moment, but I don't need that strategy. Like, if it landed on my 2 feet, I'm okay. And even those moments where I struggle, it'll be okay. Like, I won't instantly love my body, or I won't.
Right.
But that it's okay, I'll sort it out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's that old part of me that tries to help me when something feels scary.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, but no thank you.
Like, thank you for serving me, but I don't need you.
Yeah.
To recognize the strength, like, I can do this. Like, I don't need that. Like, I have other strategies that can help me.
Yeah, and even in that, you don't have to be cruel.
Yeah, it's like letting an old friend go, because they're not serving you well
anymore.
That's
right, but we don't have to be like a violent person in the process.
No, you don't have to be mean about it, but just like,
right.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're thanks. Drift. No, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
What Lacey demonstrates so well here is the ability to ask for help, get what she needs, and change the way that she thinks about herself. And I want for all of us to know that no matter where we've come from, we can look back with accepting eyes. That's how it was. And I can't actually change the past by being more critical of myself now. But what I can do is soften my defenses, allow myself to know that I'm going to be good and loved and lovable, even in the midst of the mistakes that I make. My hope is that in listening to Lacey's story, in listening to all of these podcasts, that you remember that you are not alone in doing the hard work of being human, and that all of us are just doing the best that we can, taking one step at a time to be more fully ourselves, more connected with our past and our present, more hopeful about the future, and more loving and kind to the people in our lives. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced by Jody Martinson, mixed by Will Howie. TK Matunda is our associate producer. Fabiola Carletti is our digital producer. Tanya Springer is our senior producer. RF Narani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC Podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.